Wasn't that a time?
Time to try. The soul of man was a
bad. I'm sure there's a reason we're playing this, and as soon as Alan's here, I'll let him tell you why. Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable. Very nice to have you with us. Well, there he is. Why were we playing the Weavers?
Because this is such a terrible time with Trump and everything that he's doing. I woke up this morning and I was thinking about the Weavers and Lee Hayes, who wrote the song with Pete. And wasn't that a time? What a terrible time. And I said, okay, well, then that's the song we should play this morning.
Well, we're going to apropos, certainly, because we're going to talk about Teresa and I traded a few emails overnight on this of just it seemed with the tweets and everything that especially dire yesterday.
it was the most stunning day since when? I don't know. Since maybe the first day when he came down the stairs and said what he said when he announced that he was running for election. It just, the series of tweets seems so, there's the only other word I can think of it, is unhinged.
And that was apparently after taking a vacation.
Right.
So,
and I just, the world is watching.
Right.
The world is watching.
Well, we'll get into this. Let me introduce the panel to you, and then we'll get started. Teresa Bourgeois is here. She's a communications consultant and a darn good one, and we're thrilled to have her. Thank you very much for being with us.
Delighted to be here.
I love that, and a darn good one.
Also, right up there, our good friend Joe Bonilla is with us, also a communications consultant. Probably a different client list you two have, right?
Yeah. But look at the sweatshirt, though.
Yeah,
WAMC
sweatshirt.
He's got the WAMC sweatshirt.
Yeah.
Well, it's interesting. Do you both do exactly the same thing? I know that one of the things that Joe does is you got a problem, you know. Something bad has happened to your organization, and you call in Joe, and he handles it.
At any hour of the night.
That's right.
And he handles it. Do you do that, too?
I can do that. Yep. Right now, I'm not doing that, but yes, I can, and I have, and yeah.
And our friend Mark Bean does that, too, right, Joe?
Yeah.
Right. Crisis communications.
Yep. Rapid response. Yeah.
Rapid response, right? Crisis communications. I think we need some crisis communications in the country right now.
I think so.
What do you think?
That sounds pretty appropriate, right?
And you do a lot of events. I love events. Event design, planning.
Yes, event design, planning, management, you know, everything from concept to execution.
Right. Yeah. Just driving policy agenda, that's what.
Yeah.
Now, Jen Smith will be with us in a few minutes.
She's coming over the mountain.
Traffic.
She's on. Right now is on the ramp on 90. So she'll.
Oh, is that right? You know, one of the worst things, Joe, and I've done it so many times. I know is when it gets icy, and you're coming over Route 20. There's that loop.
Yeah.
Know, this round thing. That's scary. I mean,
it
that's
is.
Really scary.
It is. Yeah. There used to be a Disney movie that they showed us in high school on the old 33mm. 33.
Yeah.
And
I'm older. I was 16.
But it was called Beaver Valley was the name of the movie, and but they showed the sea otters in that, and they would go up on the top of the hill with the ice and the snow, and they'd come and they play the dun 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 dun, dun and the otters would just go right to the left, and that's what I feel like when I see things like that on the road where the cars are just going to the right to the left and. That's awful.
Yeah. But we all learned, didn't
Hi.
We? We all learned in driver education course about centrifugal force. You remember that?
Yes.
Yep.
In which you were sort of forced to the side of the road. And our wonderful Jen Smith, who is just coming in, has to come over that Route 20 with those things. There's only one place worse in this world where you get that kind of a round, death-defying thing, and that's when you're coming off the Triborough Bridge, the RFK now bridge, but the Triborough Bridge coming into Manhattan from either Long Island or the Bronx, and there's a round loop-de-loop there. And my father, who learned how to drive when he was like 58, he would curse.
Did you see what that guy did? You see what that guy did?
Well, isn't one of the I think I'm thinking of the same place you are, but isn't that one of the ones where you just go into the intersection, you kind of close your eyes and hope for the best?
Driving in India.
It's a weird B merger, right?
Yeah.
Well, yes, and we have two of those here in Albany from anybody who comes to visit us. If you take Henry Johnson Boulevard.
Oh, yeah, right? You don't do
now
that.
Now you want to go on 90, but right. You have to cross two lanes of traffic to get into that into that left-hand lane. And as soon as somebody sees you trying to do that, do they take pity on you? No, they speed up.
Bumper car. Makes the video game just that much more fun.
Right.
And now we're bracing for this. Is my new favorite phrase, a bomb cyclone.
I don't know. I didn't know. The
bombogenesis cyclone. Yeah.
The bomb cyclone hurricane. with a polar vortex chaser.
Fun tropical climate.
Add some thunder snow into the mix.
It's going to be great.
The weather people are having a blast.
Jen Smith just joined us. She is a reporter for the Berkshire Eagle, and we love to have her here every Wednesday. Good morning. How
are you? Good morning, and safe driving out there. I saw three accidents, including one poor car that was in the middle of a field. How it got there, I don't know.
Which field?
Yeah. Well, I take 43 over, so I take 43 to the 90 ramp and cut over there. So I go through West Sand Lake, so it was in that area.
I love that because everything, you know, my great law is that everything takes the. So you say, where does your father work? He works over the GE in a helicopter, presumably, or the 90. Which you just, I drive on the 90.
The 90.
And Alan Chartok is here. Good morning, Alan.
Hello. Great to be here with a report to you that, for the first time since I've been here, there was so much money that was coming in the mail from the weekend, from the long weekend, that they couldn't get to it all in one day. But we think, it's a guesstimate that there is now $780,000 in the lockbox, and that has come in about 2 weeks. I still can't believe the generous ability of everybody to understand how important this tower is. It's wonderful.
And, of course, you can still help.
You bet. We need $2
million. That's right. We're not there yet. WAMC.org. And you can call 1-800-323-9262. WAMC.org, though, will take you where you need to be and give you more information on what it is we're up to. All right. Let us start with how we started the program and the ultimate, which is what the hell is happening with our world, but we'll go with...
wasn't that a time.
Yeah, wasn't that a time. Well, we're going to start with Trump on the deep state. He urges the Justice Department to act on Comey, suggests that Huma Abedin should face a jail time. And then here is the... here is the full tweet. Crooked Hillary Clinton's top aide, Huma Abedin, has been accused of disregarding basic security protocols. She put classified passwords into the hands of foreign agents. Remember sailors' pictures on submarine? Jail! Deep State Justice Department must finally act, also on Comey and others. And for me... And we can all talk about our the most concerning part of that tweet, but that deep state Justice Department line is fairly concerning. I would also like to add the tweet that Sally Yates wrote yesterday, saying the POTUS on 12/28, I have the absolute right to do what I want with the Justice Department. End quote. Today he slanders career DOJ professionals as deep state, calls for prison for a political opponent, and tries to sic DOJ on a potential witness against him. Beyond abnormal, dangerous.
It's unbelievable. It is really unbelievable. You know, I've said it from the beginning.
I think it's believable.
And I'm saying, yeah, you're right, of course, as you always are.
Sorry, I didn't mean
no,
to.
No, you're right. Of course you're right. It's believable because he's doing it, and we know that. But think about the road to fascism. That's what I think we're facing here. When you take when you underline, when you take the buttress out of all of the Justice Department and the rule of law and everything else that goes on here, that's how we got Hitler, literally, and that's how the Germans did, and that's what you worry about when you see something like this. This guy has no regard for what's right and what's proper.
It feels like an earmark for a witch hunt, in terms of just tearing things up and dismantling what should have been, you know, a clear cut, you know, protocol of due process in this investigation. And you know, I think every wrench in the rest of the toolbox has been thrown into it.
But we have to assume, right, Jen, that this is all because he sees the train coming down the track on the Mueller investigation.
Papadopoulos.
And Papadopoulos. Right.
I think Papadopoulos' information is a game changer in that the information did not come from the dossier. It came from Papadopoulos talking to the Australian diplomat in a reported, you know, drunken state, conveying the information that they had. And I think that's a game changer.
You know, things to be outraged by. You can take the fresh stuff every day and be outraged by it. But Roselle, my wife, has taken the famous quote about Donald Trump and what he does to women, and has had it blown up 10 times, and it is on the door to our kitchen. It is so grotesque. It's unbelievable. We should probably read it here, except that you can't read the F word, and you can't read, you know, the P word, and you can't read all that stuff because you lose your license. But if you say it's amazing, because if you say it, the F word, everybody knows what the F word is. If you say the P word, everybody knows it because everybody's walking around with pink hats on their, you know, on their head. So everybody gets all of that. So you read this thing, and here's this gigantic poster on our door, which is what the president of the United States says. Now we see people being, you know, losing their jobs and everything else, which is proper in many of these cases. Now we see, Joe, I hope you'll pull the Peter Martin interview that we did with him when we were at Lincoln Center. Do you remember that?
Oh, we don't have that.
We don't have that?
Oh, no. No.
Is that right? We don't have
it? No.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, anyway, he was pretty arrogant that day, I remember, pretty well, and saying, God, you know, you want to be a little scared of this
guy. For people
who
don't know who he is.
Yeah. Go ahead.
He's the head of the ballet.
Ballet master. Yes. Right. Ballet master of the New York City Ballet, which it was at,
for many, many,
of course, as a summer residency in Saratoga, as well as being at Lincoln Center in New York, and has announced that amid multiple allegations of impropriety, that he will be retiring. Has retired or will retire?
I think the board has retired over the weekend.
Yeah.
Took over for Bouncer. But I think the series of tweets, it was the DOJ tweet, and it was interesting the number of people who responded to that. But I think it's the whole range of comments that the President of the United States made yesterday, each one of them disturbing, whether it was on North Korea or, you know, just the whole gamut of them, which I think got people like Richard Haass from the Council on Foreign Relations and others, you know, really leading people to tweet out how dangerous this is. And the question now, I think, is for the Republicans, the leaders in the Senate. What will Mitch McConnell say? What will Paul Ryan say? This cannot be normalized.
Neither of those guys, Teresa, is going to do what they need to do. However, Mitt Romney may do it. Right. Now, we have to see what kind of guts he has, because he certainly said the right stuff during the campaign, you know, in calling out Trump. Whether he gets to the United States Senate and is just as vigorous, because those are the guys, by the way, who brought Dick Nixon down. It were the Republicans who were men of principle, right, you know, who stood up and said, you know, this cannot be allowed to go on.
I want to get to the Orrin Hatch story and the Romney effect on that. And we just have about a half a minute left. But when we look at this story of when it comes specifically to what Republicans do, and I agree with Alan, I mean, you don't see anybody doing really anything. And then there's the whole Nunes issue, too, of what's going on there that we need to discuss.
The man in the bushes.
Yeah, didn't he recuse himself?
He did.
He did at one point.
But he's engineers.
But he's back now?
He's back.
Right.
But there is a real push in California to unseat him, which is interesting. And whether it'll work or not. But he's getting a lot of pressure back in his district, and he needs to get more pressure. This needs a lot more transparency and a lot of, I don't know, the other question is, what are they doing with the budgets? You know, it's January 19th is when the budget has to be resolved. And where is the funding going in the Department of Justice budget? What are they going to fund? What are they not going to fund? Mm-hmm. I think that'll be an interesting barometer as well, because this is all, you know, we can focus on the tweets, but really what matters is where the resources are.
Mm-hmm. Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation. We have Teresa Bourgeois, Joe Bonilla, Jen Smith, Alan Chartok, and we welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. We'll be right back after the short break. Good morning and welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion for this Wednesday morning. It's the 3rd of January, and we welcome your letters panel at WAMC.org. We have some letters.
We do. Here is Dearest Roundtable Gang, and that's from Annie. I believe that it's time for those of us who know what is right in our hearts to do. We need to form a national march stating, quote, the words of Trump are not the words of Americans. How do we start? 4 question marks. Annie in Saratoga. All right.
Well, there is a march on January 20th. Again,
here in
Europe. There's a march happening over in the Berkshires to commemorate the, you know, last year's
Women's March.
And we had something called the Four Freedoms Coalition, which has been a grassroots movement that has been keeping up and meeting regularly. So it's out there. If you just join the swell.
Doug says the midterms. It seems absolutely critical that we turn the Senate majority Democrat this November. Am I correct in thinking that a Democrat-controlled Senate would have put a check on this dangerous president? Well, like chicken soup, it wouldn't hurt. On the other hand, it's interesting that the current thinking is that they can take the House, which is way behind in terms of numbers, but the Senate is now one vote behind, but there are so many Democratic seats being defended.
It's 25 seats.
That a lot of people think it can't be done. I think it can, because I think that the mood of this country is just so. There was a story about, where was it this morning, in one of the newspapers about, I guess it was Iowa? I'm really not sure about how he's gone from a supermajority in that state that they're talking about to 25% or 30%. So I think this is going to be a wave. I do.
One of the things you're seeing, you saw more of it over the last 2 days, is key Republicans in the House are retiring. Bill Schuster from Pennsylvania, who's the chairman of the House Transportation Committee, announced yesterday that he's not going to seek re-election. And the three chairmen of the transportation subcommittees have already announced they're not going to seek re-election. The chairman of the Fiscal Affairs Committee, the chairman of the Science Committee, so these are top leading Republicans, are all announcing that they're not running.
Why is it easier to leave than to raise your voice?
I think that they see the wave coming. They don't.
There's some of that.
I think that they see the wave coming, and it's just a couple of them said it's not fun anymore. That they just, you know, they don't want to be in the position of defending the tweets. And they think it's time to go.
Yeah, and there's one other thing, you know, here, and that is, I hate to say it, but it's very practical. A lot of them reached, when the Republicans got in, they decided they were going to put a limit on how long you could be the chairman of a committee.
Correct. Mm-hmm. Right.
Which seemed on its face to be a good thing, because some of those guys, you know, were there forever. But A lot of them are reaching the end of their tenure, and they will lose a lot of power. You know, when you're the chairman of a committee in the United States Congress, you got a lot of power. And then when you're not, you say, okay, the heck with this. I don't want to be a backbencher again. So I think that some of that is what's going on.
The challenge, too, and this is deep in the weeds, but that the moderate Republicans are more likely to lose. So right. That means that you will end up with a much more conservative Republicans who will more likely win, and that will create its own dynamic the next House.
Well, you know, there's another way of looking at that, Teresa, which is in order to win in the United States, you got to be somewhere in the middle, because if you're regarded as a wacko, you could lose. And so that while you can win a primary all right, because a lot of those right-wingers can win primaries, that doesn't give them a good position when it comes to the independents.
Well, I think just in the marginal districts, it's the swing districts that they're more likely swing. In the previous year, they might more likely swung Republican, but I think this round they'll more likely swing Democrat.
It'll be more split this year.
It'll be more split. So we'll see, but I think nothing will happen. You know, the previous letter writer said, what can we do? Well, you can register to vote. You can encourage your friends to register to vote, and then you can work to get them to vote, because if people don't vote, nothing will change.
And you can run for office yourself.
You can run for office yourself. You can get engaged.
But think, if everybody who had a friend in Iowa or who had a friend, you know, because we get a lot of letters saying, hey, I live in New York, doesn't matter. But, you know, if somebody really, I have a colleague I had a colleague at SUNY at Albany. He takes his stuff very seriously. He gets on the phone, he calls everybody all over the United States who are in marginal districts.
Right. Mm-hmm. And talk to your friends.
And I think that's something that's consistently happening more often.
Sure.
Is that you just have a lot of folks from out of state really, you know, creating dialogue, calling homes, sending postcards, you know, having conversations in their living rooms and meetings in their living rooms about, you know, what can we do about this race or that race. And I think that's something that anyone who's going to jump into office, especially if they feel like they're going to be the change, has to pay attention to. It's got to be part of their strategy. I think you can't bank on using some of the old political strategies that, you know, have worked in the past. I think you have to really be mindful of what all these parties are saying, because I think that's it's not just a hard right or a hard left. There's a lot of variance in between views right now, and what's happening economically in each individual state. I think is you have to pay attention to those issues. You know, we'll talk about it, I'm sure, more when we look at Utah, but there's a lot of leadership in issues changes happening there.
But it's still tried and true in terms of that personal relationship people can have when they talk
absolutely.
To somebody else, when they're trying to run for office or trying to convince somebody that they need to support these candidates. It still comes down to, you know, that personal connection, what their values are, mm-hmm. and making that connection there.
But that's still why I like my friend at the university who sits on the phone. You know, it's one thing to be a New Yorker who goes to Iowa and knocks on doors. Where are you from? Whereas if you call people who you know and motivate them to get involved, you know, then you're dealing with real Iowans, right? So that's a possibility.
I've been thinking a lot about my parents were leaders in creating what's called the Citizens Party in this town that I was in Cohoes, New York. And it was in the 60s after President Kennedy had been shot. It was a very tumultuous time. But they, in a group of their friends, joined together. The Democratic Party was entrenched. It was stagnant. It was corrupt. And they took over. They took over the city. They took over the county. And they made tremendous change locally. They brought in federal funding. They, you know, built a new school, a community center, so on and so forth. And my father was a county legislator for 12 years. And he couldn't get a lot of change, but he could be a voice. But they really engaged and made a tremendous difference. And I think that we're seeing that happening again all over, and we need a lot more of that. And you can, if people come together, like you were saying, Joe, with people they know, encouraging people they know to get engaged, you can make a profound difference. And I think we need a lot more of that now.
You know, you're mentioning the Citizens Party. We did a very interesting interview with Sam Waterston a number of years ago, a couple of years ago, in which he was espousing exactly that, a new sort of centrist party which people came together. Didn't happen.
Right.
I knew it wasn't going to happen. And eventually what happens is the people who can make money out of politics end up being incentivized to run for office and to stay there, as opposed to good people who tend to drop by the wayside after a while.
Right. It only lasted for about 12 years, but these were people who were, in fact, elected the first woman mayor of New York State, elected out of this effort, and made a tremendous difference, and they acted locally, but they also engaged in national issues as well, and I think that's what we need right now in this difficult time.
Christopher says, good morning, panel.
Good morning, Christopher.
The Times Papadopoulos story fell apart within hours of appearing. His name appears nowhere in the FBI and DOJ testimony to the Judiciary Committee, nor in the joint analysis report from Comey, Brennan, and Clapper. Congress was briefed on Carter Page in late summer 2016. If this drunken conversation in May 2016 kicked off the FBI investigation in July 2016, why wasn't Papadopoulos interviewed by the FBI until January 2017? Anybody?
I don't know the answer.
No.
I didn't. This is the first I of the notion hey. that fell apart.
Hey, you write them, we read them.
Right.
Brian says, 25th Amendment. Good morning, friends. Based on the latest nuclear button tweet and in big block letters, seriously, how close are we to seeing the 25th invoked? Not that close.
A major Google search yesterday, I read that 25th Amendment, Section 4. That's what you want to read.
Lisa says, insane? Serial? I don't know what to label him as, but I am scared. Isn't anyone in Congress able to see that he's dangerous and mad? What are we to do? Any suggestions from the panel? Well, we've been talking about that this morning. But, you know, people have to find their own way here and do what they think is right. And we've been talking about some of those things. But I suggest that there are an awful lot of hypocrites in Congress. These are people who know, damn well that this guy's off his rocker. And they say so to each other, and we hear about it, senators and Republican congressmen, but they're not willing to lose their seats yet.
I also think we can locally put a human face on a number of these issues. So key issues on the horizon, besides his demeanor at the budget. So the Child Health Plus funding is in real danger of losing it. They've extended for a little while. But do we know people who use that program? Can we put a human face on that so the people who might not support the funding and understand how important it is? Can we put a human face on DACA?
But let me just stop you there, because I think that the point on the Child Health Plus side is ignored by a lot of people. This is not a program for only poor people. This is a middle-class program, so that people who don't qualify for Medicaid but who are the next level up
can't afford health insurance.
And I know a lot of people, some of whom are Trump voters, who have many kids, and they depend on this program. When it comes to the war on the poor, Trump is predictable. He doesn't care. You know, he feels they don't vote. And if they do vote, they didn't vote for him.
They didn't vote for him.
It's these middle-class voters on child. And I think that is something, Teresa, that needs to be emphasized.
That's why we need to put a human face. People understand who is benefiting from these and what's the risk if these programs go away.
But even you have infrastructure. You look at the deal that Governor Cuomo and now former Governor Christie had with the Gateway Project, and then the Department of Transportation said, well, that was a deal with the Obama administration. This is not even a deal that we're doing. So this is a situation that affects the lives of commuters in New York and New Jersey. And again, these are issues that can't be just kept on being pushed under the rug. These are issues that have to be dealt with today.
Right. And even, we're talking about the Department of Justice. I was looking at their budget last night, because, again, this budget bill, January 19th, is looming large. And we don't want a lot of deep budget cuts being pushed through without focused attention. And, they're proposing to put a lot more money in border enforcement. But they're also proposing very deep cuts in environmental enforcement. Mm-hmm. Is that really what our priorities are?
Yes. Their priorities
no, but,
are.
Yes, but is it the priorities of the majority of Americans? And if that's not your priority, people saying, what can I do? Well, maybe they can speak up about why that makes a difference in their community. That's what we need to do, right. Like these transportation projects. Why does it make a difference in their lives, in their businesses, in their day-to-day work?
You know, I hate to keep going back to Hitler. Sorry about that, folks.
It's
but, you know, he takes over with a minority party. And here's a guy who's got, what, 33%, 34, what is it now? Is it 40?
He's in the 34, 35 range, depending on the poll. But he's 34. He's under 35.
And yet, as you just suggest, in terms of these substantive programs, he's getting his way.
Well, that's in the next 2 weeks. We got to focus on the budget as opposed to the tweets are making me very nervous, but we've got to focus on the budget because that's what affects our lives.
Maximilian writes, good morning, panel.
Good morning, Maximilian.
Good morning.
My button is bigger than your button. What is he really measuring? I feel like I am on the playground in grade school and the bully tells me his dad can beat up my dad. It's pathetic, unpresidential, and fascist. Every time I think I cannot be shocked anymore, he tweets. It's pathetic, and even more pathetic than the 30-some percent of our nation agrees with him. These are the voting masses. It's disgusting. It's shameful. P.S. I love it when Teresa is on. You are always spot on. Thank you all. And that's Maximilian from Richmondville, New York.
Well, thank you, Maximilian. And just quickly on the what he's done is tell the world that he doesn't understand how, you know, it's a football. It's what they call the
nuclear football. Nuclear football.
It's not a button. It's a bag.
If you recall last year at Mar-a-Lago, he had people taking photographs with the guy who
was carrying a selfie. You could have a football selfie.
Right.
Yeah. All right. Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll finish up in the letters. We'll move on to some other subjects. We'll be right back after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Very nice to have you with us. Teresa Bourgeois is here, Joe Bonilla, Jen Smith, Alan Chartok. A couple more letters and then we'll move on to other topics.
I like this letter. This has to do with Mitt Romney. Good morning, panel.
Good morning.
To Alan's point regarding Romney as a check on Trump, Romney is an opportunist, as demonstrated when he snuggled up to Trump and got humiliated to get the Secretary of State job after calling Trump a fraud. So I wouldn't hold out much hope there, and that's Bob in Milford.
I tend to agree with that because, I mean, that basically throughout the campaign, Romney was one of the biggest opponents to the Trump candidacy. But as soon as Trump won, then was like, well, maybe I'll become your Secretary of State, and had that awkward photo at dinner. It was just disgusting. So I don't know if Romney would be that check, if you will.
So I spent 1994 working with Senator Kennedy in the campaign to defeat Mitt Romney, so which we succeeded. Yep. It was a glorious evening. But I think that it was great to beat him. But I do think that it's possible one of the things that Trump is most concerned about is Romney going into the Senate, because that's his pathway to the presidency again.
So if you listen to Bannon... that's instructive, because Bannon is the guy out there calling out Romney all over the place.
Right. They were trying desperately to get Senator Hatch to not step down or not retire, because they do not want a pathway for Romney to gain notoriety and particularly be a potential contender to Trump in the 2020 election.
I don't see how Romney beats a Trump in a primary. I don't, in a Republican primary, because the Republican right to this day, and the Republicans are incredibly supportive of Trump. I mean, there has been very little defection from that if you look at the polls.
Yeah. I think Kasich is still a challenger, or maybe some of the generals.
He writes me every night.
Some.
Every night is a nice.
He's
note.
Running hard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. My mother always claimed that, people like Eleanor Roosevelt wrote her all the time. But Kasich writes me every night on the email. I never answer him back. Scott. Scott. Every night, there he is.
He's asking for money, I think.
Yeah. Scott says, Scott says, good morning, panel.
Good morning, good Scott.
Morning.
Scott.
Happy
well, New Year. I'm a huge WMC supporter. I understand there's a bit of community pushback on the tower. Could you explain the issues involved, the basis for the pushback, and the compelling benefit of the tower? For example, is WMC buying an existing tower, a right to construct a tower? Does it really create an environmental challenge? Thanks for clarifying, Scott from Pittsfield. Well, ladies and gentlemen, I just saw $780,000 come in a week and a half. I see one guy wrote a letter to the paper, which was misinformed and silly. So that does not mean community pushback. I want to start with that. Now, these other questions are interesting. So was the tower there? Have we been on it for all of these years? Yes, there was a tower there. We were on it. If it got sold and somebody had asked us to move as a result of that, we would lose most of the major power that we have, which is a lot of watts. And most of the people who are listening right now could not hear the radio station. So that's the answer to that one. And that's the most compelling, as you say, benefit to the tower. So we are buying, yes. Is WNC buying an existing tower? No, we bought it. We own it now. A right to construct a tower? No. Does it really create an environmental challenge? Absolutely not. There's this beautiful tower up there, and it's, you know, there are always competing values. There will be some people who say, well, I'd rather not have it, you know, up there. But would you rather not have this radio station? You know, a number of years ago, I should probably not tell this story, but I'm going to. A number of years ago, a certain environmentalist, who shall go nameless, decided, he looked up there and he said, no, I don't want it. And he said, take it down. And he got one of the guys in Bill Weld's government to go along with him, who had a high position. And then he came to town. The governor came to town. And I believe he got about 7,000-8,000 letters, as well as I could figure, saying, please, it's our radio station. Don't take it down. What are you doing? Why would you do that? Well, he came to town, and the always wonderful Clarence Fanto stood up at the meeting from the Eagle and said, well, are you, Governor, are you taking down that tower? And the governor said, no, we think the environmentalists have a point. Which some people's stomach dropped out of their bodies. And he said, so, but we've decided on a course of action that will satisfy everybody. We're going to paint it green and put a big green bow around it, but the tower stays. And that was the end of it. And one of the reasons why I've always loved Bill Weld.
We are going to take
a bow.
How big of a bow?
A big green bow.
Oh, look at that.
A tower-sized bow.
Oh, look at that.
Yeah. Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll move on to other subjects. We have a news break, and then we're going to talk about, all kinds of good stuff. It depends on how you, I guess, define good. But we'll talk about all kinds of stuff after the short break. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion for this Wednesday morning. It's the 3rd of January. Very nice to have you with us. All right. Let's go to let's move on to some other topics and see some other things. Oh, you want to go? Why don't you finish off with the letters there, Alan?
Okay.
We got a couple there.
I'll do as you asked there, Joe. Maureen says, dear panel, please offer some suggestions about how to stop this madness. I am again in a state of nervous agitation about the North Korea tweet, completely outraged that Trump can dare make light of the destruction of so many and so much with this foul communication. And must we just sit here and watch this unfold? Group?
Well, again, I think these tweets against North Korea coming 5 weeks before the Winter Olympics in mm-hmm. South Korea is just, I'm kind of shaking my boots a little bit because mm-hmm. this is, what could lead to mass destruction at this point.
But what I'm so interested in is, the idea that, he would play with, and I think the letter is a perfect letter, play with people's lives this way. And there's obviously a sexual innuendo in, mine is bigger than yours thing. He knew exactly what he was doing. And this is what this guy does. And I would bet about a third of Americans applaud it.
Well, I think he's speaking to his base, but the whole world is listening.
Sure.
That's the difference. And that I don't think that he understands the enormity or the consequences.
He believes it's a game.
He doesn't understand the global dynamic. Mm-hmm. And so I think what individuals can do, again, I'll go back to the same, maybe Pollyannish. I think you can encourage your elected officials to speak out, and then you can engage locally on issues that matter to you. And remember that in the midst of all of this tweeting, they are working on a budget that will have generational implications in your life. And so pick an issue, whatever it is, whether it's education, transportation, environment, focus on where the budget cuts might be and get engaged and talk about that.
Or you can do what Pete did. Every Saturday morning, he would take the banjo and he would go stand on the corner with some other people. That begins to add up. Sometimes the people who do that are not, you know, basically, perfect. But on the other hand, you could. I mean, if you're asking me, Maureen, what to do, go out and stand in front of town hall.
Just be engaged.
I think, too, if especially if you're a donor to any of your legislators, you know, say you're not going to donate unless you're going to take a harder stance on some of these issues that really matter to you, to your community, to the nation's well-being and safety.
And pick an organization that you care about locally and get engaged in that. The human service groups are in dire need of help. Get engaged. That's what we all need to do right now, get engaged.
Well, sure, and there are different levels. I mean, what I just said about standing in front of town hall, you can do that.
Absolutely.
I mean, you know, you can just decry the fact that nothing's being done, or you can do one point of light, sorry about that, bushes, yourself, and go and do something.
Get out a piece of paper and a pen and write a letter and mail it to your senator and congressperson.
Patrick says, the state of affairs, now that we've reached this point, it should no longer be a Democratic and Republican issue. By golly, how about general consensus? And then,
I agree with that.
Yeah, absolutely.
And Corey says, at which point do we ask ourselves if this marriage of states is sustainable? With the polarization between far-left progressives and far-right conservatives gaining more and more in the middle ground on each side, would it make sense to start talking about secession? Why should the United States be 50 states? Why not 40? Why not 60? Why not six different regional nations? Getting 360 million people to move in the same direction is a fool's errand. I don't agree with most of what you guys say on the panel, and I know you wouldn't agree with most of what I would have to say, but why should we use the bludgeon of democracy to impose our wills upon each other? Well, it got tried in this sort of Civil War time, and that's not a good idea. The good idea is to basically make the points you need to make, and sooner or later people will come around. Look, Donald Trump's numbers keep getting lower and lower and lower, and that's because, you know, Americans aren't stupid. They see it. They see where it's going. So, Corey, despite your baiting here, I would say, you know, it's not good. That's not going to happen. There's not going to be secession. And that's, to me, you know, not an idea that really has any merit.
Well, I wanted to touch upon our ideological differences make us stronger as a country. And, you know, what we value here in New York and what folks value in Florida or wherever, that discussion and when we have a meaningful, educated policy discussion makes us a better country.
Mm-hmm. You're right.
And I think, again, it goes back just the foundational idea that the states are already so interdependent upon each other. I mean, look at just basic issues from wildfires in California. It's
healthcare.
Healthcare. You know, what we were talking about before about just different campaigns getting involved in shifting politics. You know, I don't think that it could be successful to further divide or restructure.
And I think Joe did that magical interview with Kaiser Khan recently that was just so good. And I went back again and listened to his speech at the Democratic Convention. Mm-hmm. And I think his plea about Donald Trump is one we could all heed. Have you even read the Constitution, Donald Trump? And I think now might be a good time to, maybe this again seems Pollyannish, break it out and talk to your kids about it. Talk to your family members. And the other thing is, you know, Alan, as you pointed out, the Trump people are moving away from him. And we have to make sure not we have to welcome them as opposed to blame them. I mean, that's the one thing we have to. We have to. That's in terms of Joe. You were talking earlier about the importance of one-to-one conversation, and I think now more than ever that one-to-one conversation with Trump supporters, so that we have a better understanding of their views, and you know how we can get people together a little bit more.
So I agree with you. But I have a question for you because you... No, I didn't say that.
No, no, I'm saying I'm a little Pollyannish.
Well, but no, you have to have, you know, really good goals, and you do. But, you know, this thing came out. Now, I really don't know the long and short of it, but, you know, this Hillary quote about the basket of deplorables. Yeah. And I know you're a big Clinton supporter.
I am.
So do you think that that was a major mistake?
I think,
based on what you just said?
Right. I think that she, in trying to talk about a small group of people, it got magnified and translated that the Trump people did a very good job of conveying that as something she was targeting to a much larger group of people.
But you don't think she should have said it, do you?
I think it was it was taken out of context and it was a problem.
Yeah,
it would have
face.
Been better if she had not said it. I agree with that. Mm-hmm. I agree with her underlying notion that there are a small group of people who are deplorable. You know, we saw it in Charlottesville. I mean, I think we cannot.
The Nazis, the KKK, you know.
We don't have room in this country for people who march through the streets and say the Jews will not replace us and who get in a car and mow down people and kill them. Mm-hmm. You know, they are the basket of deplorables. Mm-hmm. But I think there are a lot of other people who are Trump supporters who are not in that group, mm-hmm. and that they were, you know, appealing to their economic interests. They feel economically disconnected, and his policies were never going to help them. This tax bill makes it crystal clear that he's not on their side. And the Democrats Well, if they don't know now, they're going to find out soon.
Well, and I think that's something that, you know, folks like me and other members of the media really need to shine a light on is, you know, when you have these labels being, you know, slinged across, you know, different groups of people, and you say that people are the problem, you have to really take a further step back and look at what are the problems these people are facing that make them decide the way that they're deciding. And if you Absolutely. Look at, you know, what certain demographics are facing in terms of economic strife, you know, there was a piece earlier this morning on the NPR news about manufacturing, and boy, if you look at this region,
and retail workers,
right. that is the heart of this region. And yes, these people are making a living. My partner works in retail, and he's you know, it's tough, and he even works for a union, and it's still tough. And I think that's what you need to really speak to if you're going to make a groundswell of change, is really address those issues. And I think, again, when you look at Alabama, that's what Doug Jones really spoke to, was those kitchen table issues that really mobilized voters and voting populations that historically have not been out in mass representation.
He's being sworn in today, Doug Jones.
And one of the reasons he won, of course, is because he had a really, really, really crazy opponent. Otherwise, I don't think he would have won.
But he was a really, really good candidate. He was the right candidate at the right time for that state.
Absolutely.
And that's why they went against, you know, 20, 25, 30 years of history there. And because if it hadn't been the right candidate, I don't think...
Sure. And you can't look at it in isolation, too. I think if you look across what's happening in the nation in some of these state elections, you're seeing these small changes. You look at Provo in Utah, for example, which has its first female mayor. What does that say? And especially a state that's facing a lot of really terrible domestic violence issues against women. You know, lots of deaths in that state. Due to domestic violence there, and all of a sudden you have a female mayor. I wonder if that's linked. You know, there are issues, that's a local issue that maybe is being addressed through the the voting.
Well, that's where it comes down. These issues are gritty issues, not glitzy issues. Right. And when we look at these issues at the local level, it's again, we'll emphasize it every single day. It's important to get involved at a local level with an organization in civic life.
And know the issues that are really facing your community.
Educate yourself.
But isn't that why, again, back to the federal budget, this January 19th date that's looming of resolving the budget or not, that's why all of this matters, because the economic pressures on all those people that you just talked about so eloquently, whether or not they have supports or whether or not those supports are pulled out from underneath them will be determined by what they end up doing and making priorities in these budget choices they're going to make over the next 2 weeks.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Whether or not, you know, what kind of supports there will be for education, for K through 12. You always talk about early childhood education, which I'm a big fan of also, Jen. You know, will that funding be available for early childhood education, for health, neighborhood health centers, for manufacturing, for innovation, for science, for
research.
I think
infrastructure is going to be huge, and transportation around here. I think Joe was talking about it earlier of you know, where voters in New York and New Jersey, what's affecting
right.
their morning
Northeast,
commutes.
Everywhere in the country, yes. for infrastructure.
And mm-hmm. done the right way, it can create jobs. Done the wrong way, it just enriches special interests.
Moving on, Richard says, the Trump challenge. Panel, I think the Trump presidency has a hurricane or perhaps a bomb cyclone that is blowing down every government and societal structure that doesn't have strong enough support to endure. Rather than getting angry at the storm, President Trump, I suggest we should focus on putting in safeguards into our Constitution to prevent the rise of a Hitler-like tyrant. Trump is not quite at that level, perhaps, but the next demagogue may even be worse. Well, you know, I think he may be at that level. That may be our level of disagreement. So anyway, then Keith says the budget. Teresa, John Faso is on the budget committee in the House.
Yes,
as a constituent in his district, I've called his office many times about these cuts. He doesn't seem to care. All I get are these stupid form letter replies to my concerns about the proposed Trump budget cuts. I know that who I'm voting for in 2018. I'm looking forward to the 2018 wave election to check Trump and his agenda. And that's from Keith.
But Keith, what you can do is in your own community, through your newspaper and through other, you know, means of communicating, help people understand what the budget choices are and what effect that they will have in your community. Pick one area, you know, or broadly, whatever, however you do it. But whatever area you're familiar with and you're passionate about, try to shine a light on how these budget changes, how the choices that Congressman Faso is voting for or not, will affect your community. And that's a public service that you can do.
Well, you can give to WAMC. And I just want to say at this stage that we have just got a new figure. In, as of now, is $791,000 in 2 weeks' time. Ladies and gentlemen, that's democracy at work. It really is. And I don't think if Trump were there, we would have done it. We weren't there. We wouldn't have done it.
Clearly, people wanted the connection. This provides
people care.
The,
mm-hmm.
the tower provides a connection for them, and they're supporting that connection. But wouldn't 800 sounds like a better number?
Oh, I think 800 or 900.
By the way,
they keep on going.
So if we get, that's right. So if we get like $9,000 more today, and we haven't opened today's mail, and anybody out there who wants to get us over that 800,000
in the next 9 minutes.
Yeah, let's go. WAMC.org, WAMC.org, or call the number 1-800-323-9262, and that's what we need you to do. Our Jeremy says,
hi, Jeremy.
Hey.
Our Democratic leaders have decided it is not a good idea to respond in kind and tone to the president's outrageous behavior. So we need a designated junkyard dog responder whose sole job is to call out the president in comedic and insulting terms, sort of what happens on the late night shows. And then Julius.
I mean, your friend Senator Chris Murphy, I think, has done a really good job.
But he's not a comedian.
No, not a comedian. No. But I mean, he's been a powerful voice.
Oh no, he has.
And others.
He'd be my candidate to be president. By the way,
he's been a number of them are speaking.
He's great. Julius says to the separatist letter, paraphrasing Lincoln, a nation divided against itself cannot stand. Regards, Jules.
Exactly.
And Stewart says, we need thoughtful, workable recommendations. We, your listeners, are overflowing with Trumpian excesses. Our country needs to have thoughtful, credible, workable recommendations and congressional initiatives to change the elections in which our country is change the directions in which our country is going. Democrats and Republicans need to do much more than criticize and deplore Trump's tweets and actions. The United States needs positive actions and serious efforts to make change for the good if we are to save our country, says Stu.
Well, haven't we gotten a lot of homework today?
We have.
Yes.
Here, I've got more homework. Somebody.
I found this on the web.
Oh.
Oh, no. Oh, no. The magic is broken.
Whoa. Siri's checking in.
I found this for you to do. Okay. So here's something. Somebody, you know, I'm crazy about the census. Somebody out there, you know, knows how to put together some sort of system to get people signed up for the census. It's all going to be done electronically. They're going to try to prevent people in urban areas from signing up. So somebody out there who's listening has a skill, right? Don't you think, Joe?
Oh, absolutely.
They are going to figure out a way to, even though the Trump administration doesn't want people to register in the census, they're going to figure out a way to do it. They're
the guerrilla problem solvers.
But don't sit on your yes, yes, yes and just say, why doesn't somebody figure this out? You do one act a day. That's what you do.
Somebody do, everybody, whatever issue you're passionate about, find out what the budget cuts are, put a human face on it, contact your elected representatives, engage in your community.
And engage others, I think. Talk to your friends, talk to your family, talk to your kids. I think that's, you know, there's an AP story that came out the other day about media literacy and fake news and how there's politicians out there who are creating policy and legislation to, you know, get schools to teach that more. Very important.
And John says, stupid or deaf? Greetings. I beg to differ with Alan. I think that there are stupid Americans, but that's not the point. The bigger problem is deafness to each other's opinions. I think we are as guilty of this as Trump supporters. We liberals might even be more closed-minded. How do we change this on a nationwide basis?
Well, I think that's where it comes down to the lack of civility, but also everybody being in the echo chamber. If there's somebody who you know disagrees with you, talk to them about why they do and have the educated conversation. But to just be in your own echo chamber, doesn't that help anybody?
Mm-hmm. So what are we going to do without Orrin Hatch?
Well,
move on.
We have Mitt Romney.
So Mitt Romney has not said one way or the other, although interestingly on his Twitter account, he moved his residence Massachusetts to Utah. So that's been updated. Which,
how passive aggressive.
Yes.
Certainly seems like a sign, doesn't it?
What's interesting is that you look at last year with Trump, and Trump only got 45% of the vote in Utah, whereas Romney got over 70% when he ran in 2012. And you look at Hatch's approval, which was like only at 45%, so it was below water. Romney has favorability of over 70%. But going back to what we talked about earlier, if he's seen as, you know, this wishy-washy, kind of like this opportunist, will the voters of Utah actually resonate with that?
They'll elect
him. I think
I agree with Therese.
He'll get elected. The question is, how strong will he be, a strong, solid voice against Trump's behavior? That's where the wishy-washy comes
in. If he sees it in his interest to do that, he will do that.
And if I'm not mistaken, too, there were already in the last election some new legislators brought in. So how will he work together with that class as well?
Right, right. And will he be seen as like, well, you know, he ran for president. You know, will he be one among equals, like, you know, as when Hillary Clinton came to the Senate, where basically she got right to work, or will he try to grandstand a little bit?
Mm-hmm. Right, run for president. Well, the sad thing about and confusing thing about Orrin Hatch, Senator Hatch, is, and he was on our committee with the Senator Kennedy. He and Senator Kennedy were very close, and they created the Child Health Plus bill together. He was very focused on bipartisan legislation, and it's why he achieved so much. But in the last 5 years or so, and particularly in this last year with Trump, he has abandoned a focus on bipartisanship.
His hand up in the air.
And that will damage part of his legacy, I think, because he was so known for that. But I think, Joe was talking about it earlier, is that it's sort of taking the the path of least resistance for him. Yeah. He's following through on his campaign promise that he wouldn't run again when he had, you know, 75% of Utah voters not wanting him to run again.
And when your hometown newspaper, the Salt Lake Tribune,
great coverage,
yeah, puts out an editorial. I mean, that seems to be what put him over the edge.
A time to go.
Yeah, right. Yeah, yeah, he wasn't going to win again. He got his tax package.
It's too expensive for him. If you look at the numbers, I think they're in the Salt Lake Tribune, they were saying that, you know, what he has in the bank for his next campaign cost him double the amount his last term. And age.
He's 83. He's not well. I mean,
he'd be 90 by the
it was
right
time.
By
the, end, right. The only I think the Trump team were the only people that seemed to be pushing him to run again. Mm-hmm. But all the other forces were for him to retire with dignity. And then this is really Mitt Romney's seat. And the question is, how will he use it?
And the next time we get together, we ought to see what CNN has been fleshing all day, which is that Bannon, of all people, is now saying that meeting, the famous meeting in Trump Tower, was treasonous. Now, that's interesting, and I'm sure we'll get to that tomorrow, right, Joe?
Well, yeah, we have a minute. We can get to it today. It comes out of a book, and it comes out from a Guardian report in which Steve Bannon is quoted as saying that the meeting was treasonous. He's also saying that they're going to crack Don Jr. like an egg on national TV. The White House has declined to comment, but
you mean Trump Jr.?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. Even if you thought it was not treasonous or unpatriotic or bad, blank, and I think it's all of that, you should have called the FBI immediately. Mm. That was the comment that he made in the book. So,
Can I say one more thing?
Yes.
We're at $791. All we need is this extra $19,000 today, and we'll be at the $800,000 mark. Everybody get going. WAMC.org.